Welcome to the Deep Dive. You know, I was thinking about this today. We usually think of historical archives as these massive, imposing public institutions, right?
Right, yeah, like sprawling museums.
Exactly. You picture a museum in some capital city filled with, I don't know, declarations of war or ancient maps locked away behind that thick, temperature-controlled glass.
Oh, for sure. We sort of condition ourselves to view history as this collection of macro-level shifts. Like, society tends to preserve only the moments that impacted millions of people simultaneously.
Yeah, but that public museum concept, it gets flipped entirely upside down when you step into the world of personal digital spaces. And that is exactly what our mission is today. We're unpacking a source you shared with us that really just, well, it redefines what it means to build an archive.
It really does. It's fascinating.
Right. We're looking at a space that is profoundly intimate. It's built not for the public, but for a highly specific, curated audience. We're diving into a custom-tailored excerpt from something called the RomNote website. And specifically, we are examining Entry 40, which is titled Prayer of Reconciliation.
Yeah, and this text, it offers such a rare documented coordinate of a human turning point. I mean, we know the author, Romeo Imbian Messina, and we also know the precise moment this entry was finalized in his archive, which is Thursday, June 11th, 2026, at 3:59 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, that time stamp right there, that carries so much weight for
Yeah,
me.
absolutely. It really grounds it.
Because it wasn't recorded during some formal Sunday morning service surrounded by a huge congregation, you know,
Yeah.
or like written in a panic in the dead of night.
Right. It's just a random Thursday afternoon.
Exactly, 3:59 p.m.
Yeah.
You can always picture someone just sitting at their desk, the workday is kind of winding down, and they're staring at a screen, deciding that, you know, this is the exact moment they finally need to put their internal fracture into words.
Yeah, that's a powerful image. And our mission today is really to explore how this deeply personal prayer functions as a study in, well, radical honesty and, you know, how we use digital architecture to immortalize our most vulnerable moments. The structure surrounding Romeo's words actually tells us just as much about the human condition as the text itself.
I totally agree.
The way we log and categorize and protect our private thoughts in this modern era, it's really a direct continuation of a very ancient human urge to just curate the soul.
Curate the soul. I love that phrasing. And, you know, if you're listening to this, you've probably experienced that paralyzing anxiety of staring at a blinking cursor, right? Trying to draft a message to an estranged friend.
Oh, yeah. The blinking a cursor is the worst.
It is. You want to reach out, but the history between you two is just so heavy. And I feel like the hardest hurdle in any reconciliation is usually just finding the courage to admit that the distance actually exists.
Yeah, just stating the obvious can be the hardest part.
Exactly. But the very first line of Romeo's prayer cuts straight through all that anxiety. He writes, let me quote it here, "Father God, I do not know where to begin, and sometimes I do not even know whether you can hear me. I know I have been away for a long time."
Wow. Yeah, stripping away the ego like that is a grueling psychological process.
It really is.
Because when most people attempt to bridge a gap after a long absence, they instinctively want to offer caveats, you know?
Oh, totally. Like making excuses.
Right. The natural defense mechanism is to explain the circumstances away, to subtly suggest that the estrangement was, I don't know, a byproduct of a busy schedule or external pressures. But Romeo bypasses that entirely.
He does, because he immediately follows that opening by explicitly listing the reasons he turned his back. He says, "I turned my back because of disappointment, pain, doubt, and the desires that pulled me away from you."
That specific inventory of failures is just striking.
It is. When you break it down, it feels like he is taking absolute, uncompromising ownership.
Yes, naming disappointment and doubt, that acknowledges that his journey wasn't perfect, right? Like he felt let down intellectually or spiritually. But then adding desires to that list, that means he isn't just blaming some external crisis of faith, he's admitting to his own willing distractions.
Yeah, and taking a forensic look at your own missteps like that requires a very sturdy foundation of self-awareness. By naming those four specific ghosts, disappointment, pain, doubt, and desires, he actually prevents them from holding power over the interaction anymore.
Right, you take the power back by naming them.
Exactly. In the psychology of reconciliation, you cannot repair a fracture until you accurately describe the nature of the break. He is refusing to sugarcoat the human frailty that caused the rift in the first place.
Okay, so once that gap is admitted and clearly defined, it brings up the inevitable motivation for the return. Like, why bridge that divide right now on this specific Thursday?
Right, what's the catalyst?
Exactly. And in the source material, there's the central quote. It's actually highlighted at the very top of the entry, before the body of the prayer even begins. It really sets the tone.
It does. It reads, "I am not praying only because I am sad. I am praying because I acknowledge that you are still here."
That is such a crucial distinction.
And he reiterates this idea later on, writing, "This prayer is not simply about whether I feel happy or broken. It is about acknowledging you." But, you know, I want to push back on this just a little bit on behalf of anyone listening.
Sure, go for it.
Because throughout human history, hasn't prayer heavily functioned exactly as a reaction to feeling broken? Like the classic foxhole prayer, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The bottom falls out of your life, things get terrible, and you cry out to a higher power to intervene.
It's almost like treating faith as a cosmic vending machine.
A cosmic vending machine, yes.
Right. You insert your sadness or your trauma, and you expect it to dispense comfort or a quick fix. But Romeo seems to be making a really deliberate effort to separate his faith from his daily mood swings.
He is. And that cosmic vending machine analogy highlights the difference between a transactional state and a relational state perfectly.
Okay, say more about that. Well, the foxhole prayer is fundamentally reactive, right? It's saying, "I am broken, therefore I require repair. Please fix me."
Right.
But Romeo is demonstrating an advanced spiritual maturity here by moving into a proactive state. He recognizes that emotions are inherently transient.
Yeah, they come and go.
Exactly. Sadness eventually exhausts itself, happiness is completely fleeting, and brokenness is just one phase of a much longer healing cycle.
So if your worldview or your connection to a higher power is entirely dependent on just feeling good or even feeling adequately rescued when you're doing bad, that connection is going to collapse the moment the emotional weather changes.
Precisely the point. He is searching for a climate, not just the weather, if that makes sense.
Oh, that's a great way to put it. Climate versus weather.
He reaches out to acknowledge a presence that he believes has remained constant, even while he was actively walking away due to his own doubts and desires. He isn't demanding a magical change in his feelings. He is reorienting himself toward an anchor.
But, and I think this is important, acknowledging that anchor doesn't magically erase the suffering he's going through.
No, never at all.
Because he clearly states later in the text, "Stand with me and fight beside me. I give you all my pain and I give you all the glory. But I am not giving up."
Right.
He is asking for a companion in the trenches. And he also notes that he was given, quote, "the strength to stand back up when things seemed hopeless."
Articulating a partnership in recovery like that is a really delicate balance. He recognizes the divine presence as a source of strength, sure, but he still owns the verb in that sentence.
He owns the verb. I like that.
Yeah, the act of standing back up, the act of refusal to give up, that is his action.
And there's a really compelling paradox embedded in the metadata of this source that I think perfectly captures that tension.
Oh, the audio track.
Yes.
Yeah.
At the very bottom of the page, there is an embedded audio track labeled play theme. And the song chosen to score this specific entry, this exact moment of reconnection where he's asking someone to fight beside him, song is titled "The Battle I Fight Alone."
The juxtaposition of those two concepts speaks volumes about how we process internal struggles, doesn't it?
It really does. It captures the universal isolation of the human mind. Because you can be surrounded by a loving family or possess this profound faith in a higher power that you believe is standing right next to you.
Yeah.
And yet...
yet you still feel alone.
Exactly. When you are in the deepest trenches of doubt or trauma, you still feel fundamentally isolated. You can cry out for an ally, know that the ally is present, and still understand that the actual heavy lifting is solely on your shoulders.
Yeah, no one else can get inside your head and flip the switch from despair to hope for you.
Right.
The mechanics of healing are solitary by design. You can have the best support system in the world, spiritual or physical, it doesn't matter, but nobody can do your push-ups for you.
Nobody can do your push-ups for you. That's so true.
So the song title, "The Battle I Fight Alone," it actually contextualizes the prayer rather than contradicting it. Romeo feels supported, he feels heard, but he fully grasps the limits of external intervention. The daily grinding choice to believe, the physical act of putting one foot in front of the other despite the pain, that remains an intensely personal, solitary endeavor.
And, you know, the solitary nature of that internal battle is beautifully mirrored in the digital container he built to hold these thoughts.
The digital architecture is fascinating.
It really is. Because this isn't just a fleeting moment of clarity scribbled on a napkin that gets lost in a kitchen drawer somewhere.
Right.
It has been meticulously formalized and architected.
Yeah.
The source is pulled from the RomNote project, and the menu categorization alone is highly deliberate. It's filed sequentially under Faith Reflections, then Prayer, and definitively marked as Entry 40.
Yeah, that organization reveals a really deep desire to contextualize a single moment of vulnerability within a broader ongoing narrative. It's basically treating his own spiritual low point as a vital historical artifact.
And I find the technical lengths he goes to incredibly fascinating here, because the source notes that archive support is provided by a system called Jarvis. It also specifies that this prayer is preserved from an uploaded Word document. But, and this is the crazy part, if you are browsing the site and you want to access that original raw file, you can't just click a download link.
No, it's locked down.
Exactly. The text notes that access is, quote, handled to the existing protected request system.
Placing literal digital gates around the original artifact, like, that introduces such a profound layer of reverence.
It reminds me of the museum exhibit we talked about at the beginning.
Yeah, it really ties back to that perfectly.
Right, because the website itself, Entry 40, is like the public placard. You can walk up to it, you can read the summary, and you can understand the historical significance of the event. But the actual artifact, the initial Word document, where he first typed those vulnerable words, that is kept in a climate-controlled vault down in the basement.
Yes. You have to ask permission from the curator to see the raw canvas.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes me think that we have this deep-seated need to prove we survived our lowest points, but we still want to protect the fragile parts of that survival, you know?
Tracing the lineage of this human impulse is just remarkable. I mean, centuries ago, individuals carved their turning points into stone, right?
Right.
Or they commissioned illuminated manuscripts. Or they kept those diaries with the little brass locks intended to be read only after their passing.
Yeah, the locks diaries.
Today, we utilize metadata, cloud archives, and protected request systems. The medium evolves, obviously, but the core drive remains absolutely identical. We want to leave a trace that we wrestled with the profound questions of our existence and actually came out the other side.
And he is definitely anticipating an audience for this trace.
Oh, for sure.
Because the site menu includes dedication pages. He dedicates this space to Joey, Sabrina, Savannah, Ranald, and, quote, my love, Pinky Egg Bria M.
It's very specific.
It is. And on top of that, there are built-in accessibility features right at the top of the entry. A text-to-speech engine invites the reader to listen to this entry, complete with play, pause, resume, and stop controls.
By dedicating the site to those specific names and ensuring the text can literally be spoken aloud by the software, Romeo is constructing a legacy map.
A legacy map.
Yeah. This isn't a diary meant to be hidden away out of shame over his doubts. He wants his loved ones, and perhaps future generations of his family, to witness his vulnerability in high fidelity. He is offering them the lessons of his struggle. It's essentially a roadmap for how to return when you feel lost. But he's still using the protected request system to guard the deepest intimacy of his process.
It's such a profound shift in how we think about legacy.
It really is.
Because we so often think of legacy as leaving behind financial assets or a successful business or a polished reputation where we pretend we had everything figured out all along.
Right, the sanitized version of our lives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But Romeo is leaving behind a digital monument to the act of not giving up. He's saying, here's the exact timestamp of my hardest day, here's my inventory of failures, and here is how I found the strength to stand back up.
And honestly, documenting the messy, non-linear reality of belief and recovery provides so much more value to the people we leave behind than a sanitized version ever could.
I completely agree. So as we step back and look at the entirety of Entry 40, it really serves as a masterclass in several disciplines at once, doesn't it?
It does. It demonstrates how to own your missteps with radical honesty and really refusing to hide behind excuses.
Right. It challenges us to redefine why we reach out in times of trouble, urging that shift from those transactional demands to a simple, proactive acknowledgement of a steady presence.
Yeah, moving from the weather to the climate.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it provides just a brilliant blueprint for using technology not merely to distract ourselves, but to curate the soul and preserve our resilience.
You know, analyzing a digital artifact this intimate naturally turns the lens back on how we choose to document our own lives.
It really makes you think.
It does. And it leaves us with a compelling question to consider long after we step away from this source material.
I'd love to hear it.
If you were to sit down and create a digital archive of your own internal turning points, the rawest moments where you battled doubt, confronted your failures, and fought to return to your core beliefs, what would your entry 40 look like? And perhaps more importantly, who are the specific people you would lock it behind a protected request system to eventually find?
That is definitely a question worth carrying with you today. Because at the end of the day, the most important archives we build aren't those public museums filled with ancient maps. The most vital history we preserve is simply the quiet, time-stamped record of the day we fought the solitary battle and chose to stand back up. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive.